Hey guys, welcome to Bloodshed and Bagels, where we sit down and talk about true crime cases while enjoying our morning bagel. I'm your host, Heather, and well, I don't want to bore you with nonsense, so let's get right to it. This week I was tasked with finding a case involving a mulcher or a wood chipper. This one's horrible. Well, they're all horrible, but the things this guy did are beyond horrifying. Helen Nielsen was born July 7th, 1947, in Denmark. She was an only child and spent most of her childhood in a small village north of Denmark. She was a fun, outgoing child and enjoyed going to school. She made friends easily, and that likability continued into her teens and adulthood. During her teen years, she learned French and English. She also understood German, Norwegian, and Swedish. Hella attended college in England and then worked as an au pair in France. While Hella was living in France, she got a job as a stewardess with Capital Airways. She enjoyed flying to Africa several times and loved the thrill of discovering new places. So when she found out Pan Am Airways was hiring stewardesses in Copenhagen, she immediately applied for the job. Hella was one of 8 candidates selected and sent to Miami for training. On May 24, 1969, while waiting at her motel for a flight, she met a man. His name was Richard Crafts. He was a pilot for Eastern Airlines. Now, Richard was born in New York City on December 20, 1937. The youngest of 3 children, he had 2 older sisters. Richard attended private school, though he didn't do too well, then later graduated from Darien High School and went on to college for some time, but then dropped out and joined the Marines in 1956. Now, during his time in the Marines, he became proficient at flying helicopters. He trained fixing wing aircrafts and became a certified pilot in the late 50s. There are reports of him flying secret missions for an organization that was a recognized branch of the CIA. He remained in the Far East for a number of years until returning to the U.S. in 1966. Back in the States, he had no problem finding work as a pilot. He flew for a number of different companies before landing a job with Eastern in 1968. For the first time in his life, he was making really good money. He stayed pretty social despite the fact of having a busy schedule. And in 1969, when he met Hella, he was actually already engaged to another woman. And it seemed Hella didn't mind. For the next few years, they maintained an on-again, off-again relationship while he was seeing other women. They seemed to have a pretty toxic relationship, fighting regularly, sometimes even in public. And Hella's friends didn't like Richard and never understood what she saw in him, as she could have nearly any man she wanted. In 1975, Hella got pregnant with Richard's child, and in November, they got married. The following year, in 1976, Richard and Hella bought a ranch-style home in Newtown, Connecticut. They had their first child that year, and over the next couple of years, they had 2 more children. Hella then returned to her job as a stewardess and hired an au pair named Dawn Marie Thomas, who was 19 at the time, to care for her children. Richard continued his job as a pilot and was away from home a lot of the time. Together, their income was above $125,000 a year. Now today, that would be about $405,000 a year. That amount put them at the top 5% of wage earners in America. Now, Richard handled all of their finances, which allowed him to spend a large portion of their income on collecting guns. Big surprise. He had a huge collection spanning from automatic handguns to hand grenades. Hand grenades? What in the world? So he made Hella pay all the household bills while he spent money however he wanted. He bought tons of landscaping equipment that was never even used. They said his yard looked like a wreck. There were rusted parts and broken down machines all over. In 1982, despite his job with Eastern, he became an auxiliary police officer in Newtown. Now, he wasn't paid for his time, but he would often just hang around, even when he was off duty, and sometimes would even respond to calls, even though he wasn't authorized. He seemed really weird. In 1986, he took a job as a police officer in Southbury. His salary was $7 an hour, which was far below what he was making at Eastern. He paid his own way to expensive seminars that gave instructions on different police procedures, and he acted very strange as a police officer and even bought his own 1985 Ford Crown Victoria, the same car that the Connecticut State Police used. He paid to have it fully outfitted with radios, antennas, a siren, and even police lights. During all this time, he still continued to see other women. Hella was aware of Richard's behavior and put up with it, maybe for the sake of the children, maybe for appearances, but she openly talked about divorce with her friends. And in the summer of 1986, she retained a divorce attorney and hired a private detective to gather evidence on Richard. On December 1st, 1986, Keith Mayo, the private detective hired by Hella, called the Newtown Police Department and said his client, Hella Crafts, had recently disappeared and thought her husband may have murdered her. Hella was supposed to have been going to Richard's sister's house on November 19th, but never arrived and hadn't been heard from since. The police questioned Richard on December 2nd, and he confirmed that Hella was supposed to have been going to his sister's house, but never arrived. He then told police he had not seen or heard from her since Wednesday, November 19th. Okay, so the reason she was going was because they had no power due to a bad snowstorm. First, if they had no power and she left, why didn't she take the kids with her? Or why would she have left them at all? I don't know, it seems a little shady to me. Second, there was a storm, and your wife doesn't show at her destination, and you don't report her missing? Hello? How is that not suspicious? Anyway, the police didn't really seem too concerned in the case, because people go missing all the time, and show up after a little while. So a woman goes missing for, what, 2 weeks? And no one cares enough to report her? Not the husband, not the children's nanny, not Richard's sister. This poor woman, her private detective, was the one that reported her missing. And now the police are just like, okay, whatever, she'll be back. Oh, God. Investigators did interview friends of the family, neighbors, and Hella's co-workers. And all of them said the same thing. She wouldn't leave her children. Friends also told of Richard's affairs and how he currently had a girlfriend that he'd been seeing for many years. They also told the police that Hella wanted a divorce as soon as possible. They discovered that Richard had told several different stories. He had told the neighbors that she went to Germany. Others said that he told them that he had no idea where she was. And then on November 21st, just 2 days after she went missing, he told Dawn, the nanny, that Hella had to fly to Denmark because her mother was sick and that she would be returning on November 24th. Now on November 29th, another friend, Lena Johnson, tracked down Hella's mother's number and called her. She was not ill. She was in good health. and wasn't expecting to see Hella until the following April. Lena told police of the statement Hella had made to her in early November. Hella said, "If anything happens to me, don't assume it's an accident." Now, during the interview with Dawn Thomas, she told investigators that on the morning of November 19th, Richard woke her up at 6 a.m. saying, "Hella went to his sister's and they were to meet her there later." Dawn said that it was just really strange as there was a terrible winter storm that had come through there the night before and visibility was poor. Richard insisted that they leave right away. So by 6:30 a.m., he had everyone packed in the car with Dawn and drove to his sister's house, where he dropped them off and left. He didn't come back until around 7 p.m. that night, and Hella never showed up, even though she supposedly left before him. Later that night, Dawn asked again where Hella was, and Richard said he didn't know. Now, the next day, she asked him again, and he said that Hella flew to Denmark to be with her sick mother. Dawn also told investigators that this was when she first noticed the carpet was cut out and missing from the master bedroom. Richard told her that he spilled kerosene on it and it had to be replaced. Newton police asked Richard to submit to a lie detector test. He agreed and passed. They called Richard back in for questioning on December 11th. Now, the interview was basically the same things that he'd already said, but they did ask why he told different stories of where Hella was, and he said he just didn't want to say that she was gone and he didn't know where she was. They let him go, as there still wasn't any evidence that anything criminal had happened to Hella. Keith Mayo decided he would try to find the evidence in the missing parts of the carpet cut from the master bedroom. He found out that Newtown's garbage was dumped at the Canterbury dump a few hours away. Keith and a few volunteers went out and dug through all the trash for the next several days. They did find a portion of rug that was nearly identical to the missing piece and also appeared to have some stains that seemed to be blood. On December 17th, the Danbury News Times published a first story on the missing woman under the title, "Police Seek Missing Newtown Woman." They still considered her to be a missing person, as there was no evidence to prove Hella was dead. Dr. Henry C. Lee, one of the country's foremost forensic scientists, conducted testing on the rug found by Keith. Dr. Lee stated that none of the stains tested positive for blood. And at this point, the state attorney's office decided the investigation would be handled solely by the state police investigators. Detectives for the Western District Major Crimes Unit decided to look deeper into Crafts immediately before Hella went missing. They pulled his credit card records and found he purchased a large capacity freezer for $375 on November 17th. And also rented some type of machinery from Darian Reynolds for $900. The police had been building a search warrant for the Crafts' home, and on the afternoon of Christmas, December 25th, the police discovered that Richard had taken his children to Florida for the holidays and decided that was a perfect time to execute a search warrant. They entered the home through the back window. Now, after entering, they found the home a mess. Furniture and dirty clothes laid all over the place, dirty dishes in the sink. They located a freezer, but no body inside. They did find some towels that tested positive for blood with the luminol, along with other surfaces in the home. When tested in the lab, they found it was O positive blood on the towels, which was Hella's blood type. Now, even though they seized 108 pieces of evidence, they still had no idea where Hella was or what happened to her. Over the next week, detectives tracked down the purchase at Darian Rentals. It was a wood chipper. It appears that Richard rented and picked up a very large wood chipper on November 19th and used it to chip a quantity of wood. On December 30th, Detectives located a man named Joseph Hine, who was plowing snow on the river road during the snowstorm. He told them he had observed a U-Haul pulling a wood chipper parked on the side of the road in the middle of the night. Joseph took them to the spot he had seen the wood chipper parked. The detectives noticed piles of wood chips on the side of the riverbed. They noticed some green plastic substance along with the chips. So Detective Brown sifted through some of the chips and found some paper and a piece of mail. When he looked through the plastic mail window, it read Miss Ella L. Crafts and her address. He immediately knew something wasn't right. They got a perimeter set up and went through every inch of that ground. They found several strands of blonde hair, bone fragments, fabrics, and lots of unidentified green material. They contacted Darian Reynolds and had the wood chipper sent over to the police lab. Detectives and police diving teams continued to search for 2 weeks. They found part of a toe, a fragment of a finger, and then part of a tooth. In the end, they had found 2,660 strands of blonde hair, 60 slivers of human bone, 5 droplets of human blood, 2 teeth, part of a human skull, a piece of a finger, a fingernail, and a portion of a toenail. This just makes me sick. On January 11th, an arrest warrant was issued and the police went to Richard's home. They surrounded it and called Richard on the phone. They ordered he come out and surrender. You want to know what this piece of shit did? He said, "I'm tired. I'll take care of it in the morning." They again insisted. Richard got angry and said, "Don't call me back," and hung up. The police continued to call, and he said he would come out and didn't. They didn't want to go in. They knew the children were in the home asleep. So at around 12:30 a.m., Richard told the cops he would be out in 5 minutes. And a little later, he finally came out. Richard was arrested and bail set at $750,000. The police tried to come up with what they believed happened on November 19th. They believe Hella was killed by blunt force trauma in the bedroom and then transported to the freezer. Richard then woke up Dawn and the kids and took them to his sister's. He went back home and proceeded to cut Hella up with a chainsaw and wrap the smaller parts in green garbage bags. He then put her in the freezer, went and picked up the kids and Dawn, and then after dark that night, took the freezer, the body, and a wood chipper to the river and put her through it. When Joseph came through plowing the snow, Richard was just putting wood through to clean out the chipper maybe or cover up evidence. I don't know, that's just so much work. Isn't it easier just to divorce someone? During the trial, the most damaging piece of evidence was a chainsaw they found in the river with the serial number filed off. It had human tissue, bone, blood, and blue fibers in the teeth. The forensic lab was able to restore the serial number, and it actually matched a receipt belonging to Richard Crafts, purchased on January 9th, 1981. The police didn't actually even find this receipt. It was among some papers Hella had given to Keith Mayo when she first hired him. The remains were positively identified as Hella's by the teeth retrieved from the river. The case went to jury on June 23rd. For 2 weeks, they tried to reach a verdict, but one man held out for a not guilty verdict. I get it. People believe what they want to believe, but this case. So, on July 15th, 1988, after a 53-day trial, a mistrial had to be declared, and Richard was looking at possible freedom again. Now, on September 7th, 1989, the second trial started, And on November 20th, the case went to jury again, and it only took 8 hours to reach a unanimous verdict. Richard was found guilty of murder beyond any question. The verdict was announced November 21st, 1989, roughly 3 years to the day when Hella was murdered. In January 1990, Richard received a sentence of 50 years in state prison. My thoughts on this case, it's disturbing, horrifying. Why do people do things like this? I honestly don't even know what to say. Don't cheat. Don't hurt people. Be kind. It's so sad that these children had to grow up without either of their parents for absolutely no reason. No reason at all. I don't know. I did think it was kind of neat that this was actually the first case covered on Forensic Files, and I'm a huge Forensic Files fan. So I thought that was neat that it was the very first case that they ever covered. Now, while watching the Forensic Files, they did add some additional information that I didn't see in my research. They said that there was a blood smear down the side of the mattress, and that's how the police came to the conclusion that she was hit in the head by a blunt force object, and that was probably how she was killed. I did also want to, I guess, convey my thoughts on why it took Richard so long to come out of the house. He's an idiot and, oh, I'm tired. I'll take care of it in the morning. No. But he put them off for several hours from 9 p.m. until 12:30 a.m. So I'm wondering if maybe he was contemplating suicide, or even contemplating murdering his children and then suicide. I mean, obviously, we don't know what was going through his head, but for him to put that off for a long time, I mean, I know people don't want to be arrested, but obviously, he had to be thinking of some way out. Was he trying to escape or find a way out of the house without them seeing him? Or was he contemplating killing himself? He had a huge arsenal of guns in his house. So, or was he possibly planning on coming out shooting? I don't know. Lots of thoughts on that. I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like he might have been considering suicide because he knew. He knew he was going to go to jail. There were a lot of reports saying he showed absolutely no emotion during the trial, and his sister also said that he never showed any emotion. And I did find a report that said when they started diving in the lake, he told his brother-in-law they would not find a body. It was gone. I couldn't find anything but one report that said that. So I didn't include it in like the actual breakdown of the case, but I did want to put it in my little notes here as something that possibly was said. I don't know. This man was a freaking monster, would be the best word. He was a monster. So I don't know. Let me know your thoughts on the case at Bloodshed and Bagels on Instagram or Bloodshed Bagels on Twitter. You can also send us an email at bloodshedandbagels@gmail.com. So let's see what next week's case will be. Drum roll, please. Suspicious Graveyards. Oh, this could be lighter and maybe more ghostly and less murdery. I don't know. We'll see. So don't forget to check back next time and see what I come up with for a case involving a suspicious graveyard. Thank you so much for listening. Please consider subscribing. And don't forget to rate and review. Remember, whatever you're doing in life, always give 100% unless you're donating blood. See you guys later. Bye.